And welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the consequences of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Today's host, Chris Kington Barker, will be speaking on Zoom with guests involved in the creation of the Central Coast Economic Recovery Initiative. They will be discussing the proposed Economic Recovery Initiative meant to support a thriving Central Coast economy where all residents have access to affordable housing, good-paying jobs, and a high quality of life. You're invited to listen and participate in the conversation today, and you can call in your questions to make them part of our discussion at 805-549-8855, or you can email comments and questions to today's guests at voices@kcbx.org. Now, let's join Chris and her guests. Over to you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Brad. The Central Coast Economic Recovery Initiative, ERI, is a set of policy concepts, program ideas, and proposals to stimulate post-pandemic economic recovery and long-term vitality on the Central Coast, focusing on housing, clean energy, and infrastructure investment. Community members and stakeholders are encouraged to provide input on goals and objectives in the ERI. To date, the initiative is supported by a growing coalition of elected officials and community leaders. All the members of the Central Coast community are invited to join this effort. My guest today will be sharing more about the ERI, the main goals, who is involved, and how you can get involved, the role of Cal Poly plays, and the impact anticipated in our communities. For the first half of today's show, I'll be joined by Andy Peace, author of the ERI and SLO City Council member, Eric Viem, author of the ERI and chair of the SLO Climate Coalition, Dr. Aaron Pierce, director of the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience at Cal Poly. For the second half of our show, Dr. Aaron Pierce and Eric Viem will be joined by Ann Wyatt, Director, Tiny Housing Consulting and ADU SLO, and co-chair of the SLO County ADU Task Force. Thank you for joining me today. So I'm going to pop over to you, Eric, so that you can talk a little bit about the EDI and kind of start us off here.
Thank you so much, Chris. Yeah, thank you for spending the next hour with us to talk about the Central Coast Economic Recovery Initiative. So, the Central Coast Economic Recovery Initiative is a community-driven plan for post-pandemic economic recovery in SLO County. It was authored by a group of elected officials and community leaders that recognized that the pandemic was disastrous for our local and regional economy, and that we wanted to do something to help the region to accelerate our recovery and to take advantage of the resources that were likely to follow from the state and the federal level to advance regional priorities in SLO County, such as housing, affordable housing, clean energy projects, and infrastructure such as transportation, water, and broadband.
Is this something that is unique to this county, or this is something that a lot of different communities are doing? Is this consistent with what's happening, say, California-wide, or this is something that this community said, we really need to get on top of this?
Yeah, this is a very grassroots-grown effort. I'm sure there are other regions and communities that saw the need to support their regional economies and communities. But for us, it was not part of some sort of larger statewide program. It was really a bottom-up effort, recognizing that we had ideas about how to support recovery, and we wanted to do that.
When you say it's grassroots and bottom up, who's leading this effort and how is that being led?
Yeah, well, let me just start with the authors. So the co-authors include Councilwoman Andy Pease, City Council member. She's, of course, Councilwoman from the City of San Luis Obispo, Council member and Mayor Pro Tem, Jimmy Paulding from Arroyo Grande, Bruce Severance, who is an energy expert and sits on the Community Advisory Council for Central Coast Community Energy, Don Ortiz-Legg, who is, of course, our supervisor at the county, and then myself and James Franco, who's a strategy and communications consultant. So we were the group that came together to author, and we've had lots of support from numerous supporting stakeholders. And I think it's really important to highlight that we're a really, as a grassroots kind of ad hoc group that's come together, we're completely volunteer led. And we are intending, because there are really fantastic existing kind of longer term regional economic development efforts. Everyone has heard of REACH, I'm sure. And so we're meant to really complement those regional economic development efforts and focus on really economic recovery within the next 2 years.
How is this a different kind of an effort than REACH? How is it not a duplicative effort?
Yeah, it's one of the things, if maybe I can jump in here. Thank you for all that background is, you know, I think one of the things that I'm really excited about to be involved is that because it's grassroots, it's also very, in some ways, very near term. Like, what are we going to do right now in these next couple of years with a kind of fresh infusion of money, but also a new recognition of what does economic development mean in terms of really accomplishing a whole lot with one initiative? Meaning, like, if we're looking at transportation projects, how are we focusing our funding to address issues of equity? How are we using that funding to address issues of climate action, of resilience? And so by looking at the near term projects that are perhaps already in progress, or the seeds are planted for it, that we can then put an infusion of effort, coordination, gathering of funding to really make, enact, and implement these near-term improvements that, as we say it in our mission about kind of a quality of life for everyone.
What's kind of the process for the ERI? How does it kind of meet its goals and objectives, or even set the goals and objectives? Is it through committee? Is it, you know, how is it set up?
Well, I'll start in just talking about kind of how, what the framework is, and then hand it back over to Aaron and Eric to talk about the teams and the implementation. But we basically have three main components that we gathered this into. And that is housing. Is we just recognize, again, in terms of touching all those bases of equity, but and climate action to shorten people's commute. But businesses can't thrive if they don't have an employee base. So we really recognize that in order to be successful, we have to have affordable housing. And that's about rent and accessory dwelling units and affordable deed restricted, but also market rate, et cetera. The second big component is clean energy projects. That's a thriving hub here on the Central Coast, and we'll talk about that more. And then the transportation, in again, thinking about how are we getting people where they need to go? How are we supporting active transportation for people to be able to bike and walk and have transit? And working with the SLOCOG, our Council of Governments. Water, of course, with the drought coming on, we're really thinking a lot about regional resilience, about recycled water, about supporting our agriculture, groundwater management. So a lot of programs there that are really interconnected. And then and broadband. I mean, the reality is that in order to thrive economically and with equity, we need to make sure everyone has access to broadband. So each of those is a framework, has a scope, and then an implementation process that's some are further ahead than others. And I'll turn that over to maybe Aaron can jump in and talk about the relationship with Cal Poly and some of those teams.
Yes, please.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm here as the director of the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience at Cal Poly. And so it's not just a research institute. I mean, we do look at the foundations of climate change science and the impacts on the human and natural world, but there's a big focus on figuring out how to implement these technologies in a community, or these solutions rather, in a community. We're acting sort of as the research arm for the Economic Recovery Initiative. It was actually kind of a happy little fairy tale story when we discovered that each other exists fairly early on in the process, because at the Institute, we wanted to do projects to help the community, but we needed to, you know, have these projects that were coming from the community, and we weren't quite sure where to find them. And then we discovered that the ERI was in exactly the symmetric position of, you know, they have all these projects and they're looking for some, you know, expertise or student labor from the university or that sort of thing. And since we connected fairly early on, we were sort of able to co-evolve. So the idea that we came up with for the interplay is that the university can provide, like I said, preliminary feasibility studies for projects that come in to the Economic Recovery Initiative. And so this is not going to be necessarily a shovel-ready plan. I don't think we'd expect that in, you know, a 10-week turnaround frame, which is the Cal Poly quarter length. But we can do a lot of the initial legwork, look at the how good a site is for a particular project, and check out, you know, what the constraints are on a particular parcel, what sort of existing infrastructure is there, and do a lot of the legwork that will save time for a consultant or contractor later, and also at the same time allow the decision makers in local government or wherever to make a decision from an informed standpoint. So if they're deciding whether or not, like, okay, does this sound like a good idea? Should we go forward with this? Is this a worthwhile investment of dollars? So on and so forth. It's nice to be able to make these decisions with a firm grounding. And so that's kind of the role that we play here.
And these are then involving the students as well. So they're not only learning and doing, but they're also carrying it forward in not only perhaps in their work, but also in their lifestyle.
Yeah, so there's like a whole bunch of co-benefits that come together with this, right? So we use the EPIC model for student integration. So instead of the sort of classic model where a professor decides, oh, I've got a course that, you know, could use a good service learning component, I'm going to go out into the community and try and find a project, blah, 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 sort of shoehorn that project right into my course and so forth. There's a lot of duplicated work because you've got all these professors doing it simultaneously. And then once you manage to shoehorn a project into a course, it might not actually be a valuable deliverable at the end for the original client. So this model instead works with one coordinator at the city and one coordinator at the university. And you find a good project and then split it up and find different courses that you can put different pieces into. So maybe there's an engineering component that comes from one part and a planning component and an architecture component and a, you know, PR component or whatever. And then it's put together basically in terms of a contract and scope out the work and everything's executed like this. And since it's going into existing courses, it's fairly easy for the individual instructors to incorporate. And then you've also got things that are aligned fairly well with the student learning objectives in the particular courses. So it's on target for them. They're getting a rich learn by doing experience on a meaningful and impactful project, right? Yeah. Since it hasn't really been shoehorned, the final deliverable will actually have a lot of valuable for the city or the air quality control board or whoever you're working for. And at the same time, you're training students to be climate leaders for the future because mm-hmm. they're getting this very valuable experience.
And you're able to go multi-years.
Yes.
Through multi-students, correct? And I would imagine that as your project evolves, it's going to shift its shape in some way because you're going to need to adapt to it in some times. And you've got more flexibility in taking this particular approach.
Yes, that's right. So there's one of the challenges is fitting things into the academic calendar when, yeah, you know, not much is happening during the summer, and then other things go on a 10-week cycle, you know. But there is a lot of flexibility with being able to continue a project from one year to the next. And right, then there's also a lot of flexibility for particular mechanisms at the university. So we might have a graduate student working on one aspect of a project as their thesis, or their graduate project. And then another thing might be given to a class where you have five teams of six students all working up different potential solutions. And then the client gets a lot of bang for their buck because, right, they get to see, like, oh, not just a solution, but like multiple different solutions, and for much, much cheaper and probably much quicker than would normally be obtainable through a consultant.
Is this a new approach for Cal Poly, or is this something that has existed with other projects?
This is a new thing in regards for a couple of ways. So this kind of model that I described with one big project subdivided, the EPIC model, this is a new thing for Cal Poly. And then also the creation of the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience is very new. I mean, it's still in process right now. We're building it.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
And Chris, if I may, what Aaron has been really sharing is he's really been getting into some of the you know, as a really critical partner in the Central Coast Economic Recovery Initiative. He's pointing to one of our key implementation structures. You know, so we have all these areas of focus around how affordable housing, clean energy, transportation, water, and broadband, and that we have action teams as the implementation structure for those. And so action teams are made up of community members, university faculty, students, and local subject matter experts. That's as a community-driven plan for economic recovery, as elected officials and community leaders, we recognize how much capacity we have in the human resource within our region.
Right.
And so our intention is really to activate that human resource to help accelerate recovery. And so the partnership with the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience is a great example of that. And we have numerous other action teams that are focused on ADUs, on clean energy policy and programs, on commercial conversion and building electrification, and repurposing the Phillips 66 Santa Maria oil refinery. I'll say that, and I want to encourage folks to come visit us on our website at cceri.org, where you can review the initiative. You can actually download the full initiative, and you can also sign up to join one of our action teams and to get involved.
That's fantastic. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and with you on Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The voices you're listening to today are Andy Peace, author of ERI and Slow City Council member, Eric Viem, author of ERI and chair of the Slow Climate Coalition, and Dr. Aaron Pierce, director of the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience at Cal Poly. We're talking about the ERI, and we're talking about what it will do for this community, how you can get involved, and a lot more about the changes it can make. If you have a question for today's guests or a comment about the topic, we welcome your call at 805-549-8855, or you can email us at voices@kcbx.org. And I have you mentioned the closing Phillips 66 in Santa Maria. And what's the current student involvement there? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So we have a couple of things going on with that right now. So one of them is there's a course in environmental design called Implementing Sustainable Principles. And so we were able to bring this project to that course. And there's a student team there that's working on, they're looking at different possible repurposing solutions for that facility. So the refinery there is going to be decommissioned in 2023. And then you're going to be looking at a $1 billion stranded asset that's got all kinds of electrical infrastructure, and there's rail lines connected to it and pipelines connected to it. It has a conduit running to the ocean with a permitted outfall. There's potentially, it's a very useful site and facility. And so what comes next? So should it be made into a desalination plant or a plastics recyclery or a hydrogen peaker plant with an electrolyzer, or there's all sorts of things, right? It could also become part of a conservation project. So it's immediately adjacent to the Oceano Dunes. It could be an excellent site for tent camping and a visitor center for some sort of low impact eco-tourist donation, destination. Right there connecting to the Oceano Dunes complex. Anyway, so that's one project that's going on right now. And the other is sort of more specifically, we have an environmental management and natural resources course that specializes in CEQA law. So that's California Environmental Quality Act. And they are doing an environmental constraints assessment of that site for repurposing as a desalination plant. So does it have the necessary, you know, electrical infrastructure, and, you know, what are the issues with the waters around that area, and so on and so forth?
That's great. Eric, can you talk a little bit about some of the current action teams that have formed and some of the focus of the other action teams?
Sure. Well, in the second half of the hour, we're going to be able to spend some time with Ann Wyatt, who is leading she's a leader in affordable housing in the region, and she's leading an ADU task force. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more from her about that specific action team. And I think it's important to note that these action teams, some of which are pre-existing, and that that the ERI is a conduit for focusing and unifying these collective efforts to increase our impact again towards economic recovery. Another one which I'm part of is it's a technical working group focused on energy and energy policy and programs across the region. And you know, we have a relatively new organization. It's a community driven energy utility called Central Coast Community Energy that is a $300 million a year community driven energy program that has the potential to create significant economic benefits within our county and across the five county Central Coast region. And so we're supporting the development of policies and programs that would help to bring greater electrification of transportation, the purchase of accelerating the purchase of electric vehicles, the development of resilient microgrids at municipal and community facilities, so that when the grid goes down due to wildfire or PG&E power outage, we have community assets and critical facilities that where the power stays on. So that's the type of work that we're doing, and we have a group of a variety of skill sets that are involved, right? And so, like myself, I'm an energy expert for about 15 years, and we have psychologists, we have communications folks, and so it's open to those people that are interested in making progress supporting decarbonization and community benefit in our region in the area of energy.
And you mentioned that the website is ccerI.org. It's a really well done website. You're asking for people to come and look at it, and it's a way for them to sign up both for updates and also to volunteer. What kind of volunteers are you looking for?
Well, Andy, was there something else you wanted to jump in there real quickly?
Yeah, and I think it goes together in the sense of the volunteers. I just feel so fortunate to be a part of this team, because as Eric is going through and describing these different partners, having the Slow Climate Coalition, but also kind of formal agencies, by having a diverse group of folks who wear different hats, right, that are part of the Community Choice Energy, but also some of us who are elected and are on the Council of Governments and thinking about transportation or groundwater sustainability agencies. So as we're talking about our water resources and resiliency there, and then, of course, our connection to different universities. And so, you know, one of the volunteers might be somebody in the community who's already involved in water conservation and resilience, or in sustainable agriculture, regenerative agriculture. I think one of the really exciting opportunities is in regenerative agriculture and thinking about healthy soils and carbon sequestration and water conservation all at the same time. So I think that folks who are wanting to plug in and see what they can do, or have been looking for a team in order to collaborate and bring people together, that those are folks that'd be great. Just, you know, sign up and we'll see who we can cluster together in order to work on these initiatives and action teams.
And are there specific goals that are already set, or the teams are setting their own goals? How is that being driven?
Sorry, can I jump in just briefly?
Yeah,
there?
Sure.
I just wanted to sort of reiterate that the ERI, the whole project, is basically a conduit for getting people involved in economic recovery, getting people involved with climate adaptation and mitigation efforts in their community. And so there's all different ways to do that. I mean, in bringing your expertise, or bringing your time if you don't have expertise, or if you don't have time or expertise, but you still want to support student work,
yeah,
that's being done in this direction here, then people can donate to the Institute and help fund some of that work as well. And it's a lot of people are under the idea, or have the impression, that in order to make serious progress against you know, the climate crisis and preparedness and so on and so forth, that we're reliant on federal dollars, and there needs to be this program that's going to come from, you know, state or federal government. Mm-hmm. But in fact, 70% of emissions come from cities, which means that we have a huge opportunity with just what's under municipal control, whether that's transportation or wastewater dealing or building decarbonization or energy reduction in buildings, all these sorts of things. These are under municipal control. So the amount of effect that we can have at a local level is much, much greater than most people think.
That's a great point. Thank you for backing us up to that. And we're going to take a brief break. We're going to turn it over to Brad for station break introduction and station ID and a bit of music, and then we'll be back. Over to you, Brett.
Thanks a lot, Chris. From the KCBX Community Calendar, students from local high schools in Santa Maria are excited to present their original artwork on playing cards created for a new version of Loteria, a Mexican card game of chance similar to bingo. They're inviting everyone to join them for a Zoom event on June 4th to view their work, followed by a discussion with the artists and their teachers and a fun game of Loteria. If you'd like to register and learn more, you can visit corazondelpueblo.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, 1 year after her passing, we remember the life and explore the legacy of Lorena Borjas. She's known as the mother of the trans Latina community in Queens, New York.
Her ability to help people escape trafficking situations, I've never seen anyone like that before.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Federal prosecutors in Brooklyn investigating whether Russians meddled in the 2020 election are targeting Andriy Derkach. He's an alleged Russian operative and seven-term member of the Ukrainian parliament. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Simon Schuster, who profiles Derkach and writes about his work with Rudy Giuliani in Time magazine. Join us.
A new book tells the history of slavery through 8 distinct places, from Thomas Jefferson's plantation to Angola Prison in Louisiana.
Part of what these places do is remind us that this history that we tell ourselves was a long time ago wasn't in fact that long ago at all.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, author Clint Smith on his book, How the Word is Passed, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's ahead today on KCBX, Latino USA at 2 o'clock, followed by Fresh Air at 3. Marketplace comes at 4, and then All Things Considered at 4:30. And you're listening to Central Coast Voices with host Chris Kington Barker, and you are invited to be part of today's discussion. To bring your comments or questions to today's guest, you can call them in to 805-549-8855 or email them to voices at KCBX. Now, let's get back to Chris and her guests. Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Brad. If you just joined us at the break, my topic for today's show is Central Coast Economic Recovery Initiative, ERI, a community-driven plan for post-pandemic economic recovery in SLO County. My guests for the second half of our show today are Eric Viem, author of the ERI and chair of SLO Climate Coalition, and Wyatt, Director, Tiny Housing Consulting and ADU SLO, and co-chair of the SLO County ADU Task Force. And Dr. Aaron Pierce, Director of the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience at Cal Poly. And welcome back to all of you. Welcome for joining us, Anne. And I want to go ahead and start with you, Anne, and have you, since you're the newbie coming in here, talk a little bit about the ADU. And we already talked very briefly just to introduce that you were going to be coming in and speaking a little bit about this.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Chris. And it's a pleasure to be here with Aaron and Eric and Andy talking about our efforts toward economic recovery. And so it's no secret that safe, affordable housing is a critical need here in SLO County. Wow. And many segments of the society are struggling to find and maintain adequate housing. And so, as Council Member Peace referred to earlier, the housing supply shortage also has a critical impact on our economic state of affairs and local economy. As Council Member Peace mentioned earlier, business owners are having a hard time recruiting and maintaining employees. I've been part of the planning director hiring process at the county, for example, and we've had a hard time getting directors in even. And I've heard that at hospital director levels and for doctors, it's even a problem.
Correct.
So
yeah.
Even at the higher income kind of levels, the housing challenge is there and affects us. But the economic portion of the housing component is also huge because housing is one of our biggest industries in the county. And so the housing sector really affects the economic sector in general. And so ADU is an acronym, and planners like me love acronyms. So ADU is an accessory dwelling unit. And basically that means it's a house, a second house on residential lots in a nutshell. In general, that second house has to be the size of or smaller than the main house. And so they may be called casitas or granny units, mother-in-laws, and go by a bunch of other names. But they're basically a slightly smaller second unit. And they can take the form of converted garages or a separate house in the backyard or some extra house area added on to a main house or part of an existing house where there's extra room within the household or space over a garage. So they can take multiple forms. And so I'll be referring to those accessory dwelling units as ADUs, just to shorten the lingo. But hopefully that's a little bit clearer than mud for people. I get some blank stares sometimes, and sometimes we don't make it easier for people.
Love all the acronyms, right?
Right. We get mired in them, don't we?
Yeah,
so it in general, The ADUs are offering our kind of best chance for an increased number of safe, affordable housing units in the county and all over California right now, because the state has passed some new laws in the last 2-3 years that make building these things much more streamlined and inexpensive and allowed in more places than they have been by decreasing parking requirements and setback areas and some other changes. So we have a lot of potential. Our county and 7 cities within the county are basically putting most all of their affordable housing eggs in the one basket of ADUs. Depending on the jurisdiction, the 7 cities in the county are expecting ADUs to meet most of their low income and moderate income affordable housing requirements. And so it's a huge uncertainty and expectation that we're going to be building ADUs in some fashion or another to meet a huge level of the projected need in the county for housing.
When you say that the state has changed its regulations, do counties follow suit?
That's right. In general, state law kind of trickles down to the county level and the municipal city level. So that state law overrides individual ordinances. And so right now, it's just in line with your question, the different jurisdictions are rewriting their ADU ordinances to come into compliance with state law. But one of the new state laws that has been passed, it says that if jurisdictions don't have their ordinances aligned by now, people can disregard them and follow state law. So we're going to see a little messiness along with this, as not all of our 8 jurisdictions are yet aligned with state requirements.
Yeah. And so then you have county and then you've got cities.
That's right. All of them are mandated to come into compliance. There are 8 different codes in our county that residents have to follow depending on their abode. And so that's something that confuses people too, sometimes which code they're under when they're all slightly different. And so what we're going to see is that the 8 jurisdictions are going to have to come into compliance with the state law, but they may not make the process easy. And that's where several of us are trying to step in, because just because ADUs are allowable doesn't mean wandering through the intricate sort of windy maze of planning process is easy for most any of us. As a planner with a couple of degrees in planning, I've had some permit slaps because I myself couldn't walk that windy maze before the permit lapsed. And so tricky. So what we're seeing around the state is a need for some helping hands to help us get there and get these units built in plentiful supply. So we have stepped in at Smart Share Housing Solutions, creating an ADU slow program and this countywide ADU task force to try to help overcome obstacles, technical, political, economic, social, and otherwise, to get these units created. And that means some outreach to help homeowners understand what's possible, what ADUs can look like, what they cost, and what they can expect from the process. That means helping jurisdictions not only come into compliance with state law, but help streamline their process so homeowners can actually wade their way successfully through the process. And so countywide, the jurisdictions are expecting approximately 400 ADUs to be built per year to meet basic lower income and moderate income housing requirements dictated through the state. And so we're set up to help those jurisdictions meet the requirements. And our program is set up to help homeowners wade their way through. And so all the way from talking to them and meeting on site with feasibility analysis to help people understand what they can do according to the codes and how to find contractors and loans. and get designed and permitted through the process all the way to finding tenants. Some of this overlaps with what SmartShare has been doing with the HomeShare Slow program, helping right. successfully match housemates. It would be kind of a similar, we sort of dub this a yard share program, where we would help sort of set up the yard matches for the new ADUs.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of potential, and we want to echo the thoughts, or I do, that others have expressed, that there's a lot of potential for residents here in SLO to solve problems. It can be easy to forget there are things we can do, but if people have a garage that may be available or a backyard, they can call me and our office at SmartShare, 805-215-5474. Or they can go to our website, smartsharehousingsolutions.org, for more information. And we hope people will get involved and check
Thank
in if you have a garage you may be willing to share, or help get involved in some other way with the task force.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. And that, you know, that speaks to, Eric, what you were talking about before, of how it's, and Aaron was too, about how it's really the grassroots, the community swell response that's going to be the answer. It's not something coming from outside the community that's really going to address our issues.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. You know, I think it's actually a combination of both, and it's worth mentioning that you know, there is an existing, fairly new but yet really important regional effort. There's an organization called REACH, which is a regional economic development agency that is really led by business. And they have done a phenomenal job of bringing together business leaders and political leaders, and are working to attract, they're working on really big issues, for example, space at Vandenberg, and the reuse of Diablo Canyon and offshore floating wind. And so we see ourselves as just completely complementary to the work that REACH is doing. And we're both supporting efforts that they're leading on, and then we're also filling in gaps in places that they don't have the capacity to put attention towards, and also bringing, like as we had said, activating this grassroots human resource to raise awareness and to help to create solutions with experts and Cal Poly faculty and students taking on those issues. And so it's a really, we're excited about the work that REACH is doing. We're excited to collaborate with them. And there's just, you've heard in the news, there's major things happening with offshore floating wind off of the coast of Morro Bay, off the coast of Diablo Canyon. Also one of the world, I think the proposed in Morro Bay, one of the world's largest battery storage facilities at the old Morro Bay Power Plant. And so those are all efforts that we're supporting and interested in engaging in, along with and beyond these like very large scale projects, there's tons of opportunities through the aggregation of smaller projects. And in the first half, I spoke about resiliency, right? And this idea of microgrids. And microgrids is you can imagine that as a building that has solar and storage and maybe a small generator, that when the grid goes down, the critical loads in those facilities stay on. And so with the wildfires that have been really impacting the Central Coast and California, of course, with the PG&E power outages, we have a huge opportunity to develop these critical facilities into resilient microgrids. And there's hundreds of these facilities across the Central Coast and just numerous within the county. And what that looks like is, I mean, that's economic, those projects lead to within region economic development. They're good prevailing wage union electrician jobs and civil contracting jobs. And so the work that we're doing through the Slow Climate Coalition Technical Working Group is helping to advance ideas to accelerate development of those types of projects, because in aggregate, they make a big difference and help to support resiliency and clean energy.
Yeah, what I love about this whole thing is that we've been saying, and I've heard from so many people that have come on this show too, that, you know, each person can make a difference, but sometimes it doesn't feel like there's a vehicle that is easy to access to do that. And what you're saying is this is that vehicle. On top of that, you hear about Cal Poly being a learn by doing campus.
Exactly.
And this really demonstrates how clearly in all kinds of aspects there's crossover in being able to do that complementary of one department after another, working collaboratively together, even with multi years of students toward different kinds of goals to make things happen. We have a campus that's been sitting there with the Department of Engineering and Agriculture and Technology that has done some profound things. Poli-Sci, all of that has just been really outstanding and can get involved at a grassroots level too, and then students to carry it forward for future generations. So, you know, Absolutely. This is really exciting from all of that.
Yeah, it's really exciting that on the one hand, we can leverage the human capital that we have on campus and then also in the community. But in addition, because it's coming from a grassroots background, it's possible for the community to be involved at the very basic level. And then that also helps us to keep equity issues in mind as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what Anne was sharing about, you know, we've been hearing about the cost of housing here and the absence of excess housing or even enough housing here in the Central Coast. And to finally hear, well, okay, there's another direction to look at rather than building these unaffordable things. Let's look at going in a different direction and create a system to be able to do that. It's like, okay, bounce and pivot.
Yeah, and it also allows us to crowdsource solutions, and then you come up with things that you might not have thought of otherwise. So one example is that we're looking at a project right now emulating what was recently piloted in Los Angeles for a streetlight conversion. So they took the old streetlights out and replaced them with LEDs. And then as a result, the streetlights on that circuit draw much less current. And so you have infrastructure for more current than you really need. But then that means that you can install an EV charger on those streetlight poles. Mm. And then you have electric vehicle chargers that you can install for much, much cheaper, because the big cost is digging up the road and all the repaving and so on and so forth for the installation. So that's one kind of innovative idea that we can try out. Another one that we're working on right now is looking at commercial conversion and building decarbonization. So there's a lot of commercial properties that are underutilized. I mean, even before the pandemic, with the advent of Amazon, you know, brick and mortar businesses were kind of suffering a little bit. And then during the pandemic, we've all seen that there's a lot of, you know, businesses.
Empty real estate.
Right. Yeah. And so if it's possible to find some places where, you know, there's commercial buildings that are underutilized, and we could maybe take the upstairs and convert those offices into residential.
Yeah.
Provides for another approach to the affordable housing crisis. And then at the same time, if you're going to be doing that remodeling for that renovation, it's the perfect opportunity for an electrification retrofit. So you can, you know, reconsider the natural gas appliances and introduce, you know, a heat pump instead or that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all terrific stuff. And Eric, we've got about 10 minutes left, but I want to make sure that we're hitting all the different points that the three of you want to make. What else do you want to share about where this is going and what the needs are?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Kristen. So I'll start by saying, you know, going back to the opportunity for people to get engaged, right? And so we're, you can see the different topics that we're working on are of interest to all people across the Central Coast, regardless of their politics or their perception around, you know, government and things like that. That what we're talking about is economic recovery, and that energy and housing and infrastructure is helps all of those things. All of those things support economic recovery. And so I just want to encourage people to visit our website at cceri.org and take a look at the Economic Recovery Initiative and the plan that we have here, because I think people will be surprised. We've already discussed a number of those exciting areas that we're working on. And it's a living document, right? And so that means mm-hmm. that there's an opportunity for people to actually give feedback. And we want to have really have this be community driven and to evolve as we learn more and have, as Aaron had said, like bringing in new ideas that we hadn't considered and new resources that we hadn't considered. So we want to encourage people to review the plan, sign up, and to join one of our action teams to share that this is happening with their neighbors, and to get behind and join us in accelerating recovery in these important areas within our county.
Are members of the team available to go out and talk to groups and organizations Absolutely. Who might have an interest in sharing this information or want more information about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to the website and send us a note.
Okay.
And we'd love to engage. It looks like we might have a call.
We have a call. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do. Folks, a caller in the county wants to know whether she will be able to have a secondary dwelling when they have 0.98 of an acre now that rules have been relaxed.
I thought maybe some of these questions would come up. Give us a call at SmartShare office, 805-215-5474, and we can talk more. There are some individual site constraints that may affect the ability to host an ADU, including septic constraints and some other items. So it's impossible to say without knowing a little more whether that ADU would be allowed. Chances are the answer could be yes, but septic constraints are a big one in the county for people on septic. So we could talk more detail later.
Yeah, and let me jump in for a second, because I want to share that this accessory dwelling unit conversation is really exciting for me, and the tiny house conversation. I'm in the process of completing construction on an ADU on my property.
Fantastic.
And it's in the city of San Luis Obispo, and it's been a great process working with the city. With the ADU rules, there's actually expedited review periods, and so permitting went pretty smoothly. And it's been great just through the pandemic to be working with a bunch of great contractors, building housing, having people employed and doing great, doing their trade. And so I have on the ground experience with it. So I want to encourage people to investigate it for themselves.
Well, thanks for that, Eric. That's good to know. We'll have to hear more about your process and how it works so we can share that to help others. So I'll put you on the list for our upcoming video webinars to help people understand what to expect. And more generally, I'd like to follow up in terms of recommendations or hopes for people listening to follow on Eric's theme of engagement, that we really do hold the number of solutions and we don't need to just throw up our hands that it's out of control. Yeah. And we do have some solutions in hand if we work together on it. And especially kind of that means looking both big, like some of these larger projects Eric and Aaron mentioned, and some of these smaller projects like an ADU or a garage conversion. And so both that combination of thinking big and thinking small, extremely important as we grab on to solutions. And look for our ADU summit ahead. We'll be looking forward to sharing more information with both policymakers, planners, and the public with that. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Aaron, How about from you? What do you want to make sure that we covered today or we touch on?
Well, I think we covered most of the things that I wanted to share about what we're doing at the Institute. I guess, yeah, there's a couple other things that are more specific to the Institute, but they're not so much tied to the economic recovery initiative, so I don't want to get too much into that. I guess it's worth mentioning that we're looking at trying to help with the ADU streamlining effort by seeing if it's possible to create pre-designed and pre-approved plans, plans, so that somebody can, you know, to facilitate that process and accelerate it. And then another project that we're looking at is the possibility of trying to develop a microgrid that can generate a universal basic income for a community. So the idea,
what would that look like?
Well, so this is a project that was brought to us by the Sustainable Systems Research Foundation in Santa Cruz. And with the original project that they're looking at, it was putting a bunch of solar plus storage. So that's solar panels and battery backup solutions on agricultural facilities like food processing centers. And if that's set up by a nonprofit corporation instead of a for-profit company like Sunrun or SolarCity, then the PPA savings, the savings from the financing agreement will be enough to maintain the system and then generate some more revenue that could be used to supply like a small monthly check, if it's calibrated right, maybe $200 or $700 a month to some local community. So that would be a really exciting thing to see if we can set something up like that in this community.
So much potential.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I mean, from here on in, basically, we're just going to be working with the ERI, like I said, as sort of their research arm, so that when people suggest projects via the website, ccerI.org, that they can bring those projects to us at the university, and we can sort of vet them to look for early fatal flaws and then sort of try and help accelerate the development of these projects to the early steps of the development pipeline.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank my guests today, Andy Peace, author of the ERI Slow, City Council member, Eric Viem, author of ERI and chair of the Slow Climate Coalition, Dr. Aaron Pierce, director of the Institute for Climate Leadership and Resilience at Cal Poly, Ann Wyatt, director Tiny Housing Consulting and ADU Slow, and co-chair of Slow County ADU Task Force. Next week, join Fred Monroe as he hosts guests that will be about a whole different topic. And Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through the underwriting of by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us today.